This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh, constant cravings indeed, and it is constant every Saturday from 1 until 2. My name is Pete Dillon. I'm taking you through until 2 o'clock. We've got a great deal to get through today. We'll be talking to... Oh, God, let me start. I've got paper coming out of my wazoo here. We'll be speaking with Henry Screen, I beg your pardon. He's the executive officer of the Heathcote Wine Growers Association, and they have a festival coming up, a Heathcote Food and Wine Festival, in the very early days of October. So we'll speak to Henry about that. Otto Del Zotto, who is the founder of Del Zotto Wines up in the King Valley, is going to give us a bit of a hint of how these horrible flooding rains have affected him and the region and what difference it'll make to this 2010-2011 vintage. We'll also meet Ewan Marsh. He's the owner of The Orchard in Armidale, and a reasonably new little restaurant happening in there, and it's sort of part of a new idea of developing these little strips across from railway lines. So, there's all of that coming up. There are a couple of announcements of some more chefs joining us for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival in March next year. But sit back, pop yourself open a bottle of something refreshing and pour yourself a glass, because we've got an hour of great food and wine coming up. As always, I start with the foodie news. But before I do that, 0427 Joy949 is the number if you want to send a text to ask any questions of myself or any of my guests today. You can phone 1300 Joy949, that's 1300 569 949. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet. I have Twitter open, it's cravings_joy949. Thanks to the team from Detours for another fantastic show, and of course thanks to our newsreader Anthony Smeaton. Junior MasterChef starts tomorrow night. This is just a reminder, not so much foodie news, but a reminder. Junior MasterChef will start tomorrow night on 10. Anna Bray joins the team of Matt Preston, George Columbaris and Gary Meehan. So there's a little bit of a Sunday night tune in for you, 7:30 tomorrow night. And I need to wish good luck to Kim Chalmers. We spoke to her a couple of weeks ago about her event Tasting Notes, which is on at 10 minutes by Tractor. Last night, I believe, incredibly successful. So Kim, good luck for tonight. And now for the news. British chef Nathan Johnston has dramatically cut his ties with the Gordon Ramsay juggernaut, jumping ship only 5 months after moving to Melbourne to head the kitchens of May's Grill. Johnston has now signed to be head chef at the Millswin, the revamped Boys Club institution on Domain Road, which is in the process of being turned into a French bistro by restaurateur Davis Yu. His family is behind property developer Osvest Holdings. Johnston worked at several Ramsay restaurants in London, including Gordon Ramsay at Claridge's, the Boxwood Cafe and Gordon Ramsay Plain Food at Heathrow Airport, before working at Sydney's Bank. Front of house duties at the new Millswin will be the responsibility of Andy Russell, who spent the last 10 years on the floor at Donovan's in St Kilda. Stylish Pinchos bar Naked for Satan opened several weeks ago on Brunswick Street, and it now looks like the sky is the limit for owners Max and Pat Fink and Ari Vlasopoulos, who last week won council approval to build a rooftop bar on the historic but run-down Moran and Cato building. Fitzroy's answer to Siglo here in the city will have a capacity of 280 people and capitalise on some astounding views from its fourth floor vantage point. The trio beats residents' objections by promising to build 2 metre glass wall around the perimeter to block any outside noise. The Finks say the roof needs to be secured with some structural work. Rather considerately, they plan to install a lift to take drinkers to the top, which is good for people like me who are currently on crutches. Looks like Nick Zampalis is determined to be the fly in the Atlantic's ointment. The restaurateur has launched legal action against Crown over its termination of his tenancies at the Waterfront and Cafe Greco. This is going to be pretty ugly. It's gone to VCAT, and I imagine that Crown will be vigorously defending their rights along with Mr. Zampalis. So that's going to get a bit ugly. Good, honest Italian food, a smart environment and great wine and service. That's how Roger Fowler and Ron O'Brien described their new Chapel Street venture, North South. Both men have been cooling their heels to some extent after leaving their long-time jobs. Fowler had been the operations manager of the Stoke House and the entire Prince Hospitality Group, and Ron O'Brien, a guest here on Cravings, departed Church Street in Eteka late last year. And sort of hung around with David Carruthers at Slowdown at Harley Court for a while. He'll split his time with his other new gig overseeing the kitchen at South Melbourne's Rising Sun Hotel. North South is set to open next month, and I hope to be speaking to Ron and Roger next week. To many millions of chick lit fans worldwide, her insights into the human condition make her the female Dalai Lama. And now Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of the best-selling book Eat, Pray, Love, the film of which has just been released in the US, has given Melbourne's Movida a ringing endorsement. In the latest edition of Travel and Leisure, the American author is not only waxing lyrical about Melbourne, she says it's her idea of a perfect city, but reserving special praise for Movida's Frank Kimura. To be honest, she says, Movida has the best tapas I've had anywhere in the world. The chef, Frank Kimura, does incredible things with lard and pork belly. Even though it's an exquisite dining experience, it's also a friendly, gracious, warm place to eat. Shanghai-born Melbourne businessman Jeff Zhu, whose Dahu Holdings is behind the ragingly successful Hutong restaurant, the Dahu Peking Duck restaurant, and recently China Red at the newly rebuilt 206 Bourke Street complex, has several more projects on the boil. His company owns the former Naval and Military Club premises in Little Collins Street, and while most of it will become hotel or apartments, two ground-level leases seem destined for food treatment. One may well be a dessert restaurant for the renowned Philippa Sibley, another recent guest on this program, in partnership with her boss at St Kilda's Il Forneo, Salvatore Malatesta, who seems to have a finger in every pie just at the minute. The time frame is a little unclear, and Sibley says she's flat out redeveloping at Forneo. Zhu is considering a food concept store for the other site. In news today, pint-sized host from TV Grant Denyer is set to host the new Aussie version of Iron Chef. Judges are Epicure's Larissa DeBecky, who basically is the quiet one behind all of this foodie news each week, Simon Thompson of the Daily Telegraph in Sydney, and Leo Schofield. They will take the judging duties. Melbourne's own Richard Cornish will join Grant Denyer in the commentary box, and filming is set to happen later this month in Melbourne. Plans to reinvigorate dining at Sydney Star Casino are under an official information embargo. Management there hoping to make a big splash announcement at some point in the future. There are hints that Melbourne's Teague Ezard is a dead cert for a new restaurant, although he's non-committal. Other Melburnians invited to consider a move north included Florentino's Guy Grossi and coffee entrepreneur, the recently aforementioned Salvatore Malatesta. Grossi is a no, Malatesta remains open-minded, and in Sydney there are rumours Steve Manfredi and the Golden Century people are in serious discussions with Star City as well. Your Place or Mine is the new tome from MasterChef maestros Gary Meehan and George Colombaris. Great title for a book. So great, in fact, that it's actually been used before, about 10 years ago. Michelin star and undeniably handsome Jean-Christophe Novelli did use the title 10 years ago. And it seems he's been forgotten, as has his original Your Place or Mine. Two more names are looking certain for next year's Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and this is as close as we can get to breaking news here. One is Margaret Zhu. She is the modest yet brilliant chef from Yinyang in Hong Kong, who's coming to Melbourne early next month for the Sydney International Food Festival, and it looks like she will be returning in March. And because every food festival needs a shaggy-haired Scandinavian of good looks, Melbourne will also be hosting Thorsten Schmidt of Morling & Schmidt in Aarhus in Denmark. The Hinds Head Pub in Berkshire, owned by Chef Heston Blumenthal, has been named Michelin Pub of the Year 2011. The business in Bray-on-Thames, which he bought in 2004, was awarded the accolade in the latest Michelin Eating Out in Pubs Guide. Mr. Blumenthal said the award is such a surprise, it's a great signal to the staff for all their hard work. He added, I never get blasé about winning awards. However, the celebrity chef's purchase and refurbishment of another Bray pub, the Crown Inn, is thought to have attracted criticism from some villagers. He's saying that not everyone in the village likes the Crown, but the core locals still go there. In August, Heston's restaurant, The Fat Duck, also in Bray, was named the UK's best restaurant for the third year in a row. Derek Bulmer, who is the editor of the Michelin Eating Out in Pubs Guide, said, the traditional drinking pub has undoubtedly been suffering, but those that are making efforts with their food are flourishing. And finally, a new idea for BYO when somebody says it's a barbecue and it's a BYO. A motorcyclist who was photographed on a freeway with a barbecue strapped to his body has hit a bit of a snag. A magistrate has described the cycle rider's behaviour as ridiculous and fined him $800 for careless riding. The gentleman who is 29 has pleaded guilty to the charge. The court heard the rider was heading home on the Eastern Freeway in January 2008 when he was spotted carrying a barbecue that had been put out for hard waste collection. He was effectively wearing the barbecue in order to carry it home, and his vision was partly obscured by a steel grate. Police investigated the incident after the Herald Sun published a photo of Mr. Wiles, which was taken by a passing motorist. That, my friends, is the foodie news. Stick with me very shortly. We will speak to Henry Screen, who is the executive officer from the Heathcote Wine Growers Association, to talk about their upcoming food and wine festival. 0427 JOY949 is the number should you wish to send a text. That's 0427 569 949. You can phone 1300 569 949. That's 1300 JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet to cravings_JOY949. Coming up in the first week of October, which is my favourite week of the year because I celebrate my coming of age each year again, there will be a wonderful wine and food festival on October 2 and 3, that's a Saturday and Sunday, from 11 till 6 both days. The festival is a showcase of wine produced from grapes grown only in the Heathcote wine region. Celebrates all the grape growers and winemakers who've helped to make Heathcote a name associated with some of Australia's best wines. To talk through that festival and hopefully encourage you to get on your bike and head to Heathcote is Henry Screen. He's the executive officer of the Heathcote Wine Growers Association. Henry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete.
So is this the first of the Heathcote Wine and Food Festivals?
No, not at all, Pete. This is edition number 9.
And what happens over the weekend? What can people look forward to?
Well, as you said in your intro, it's a showcase of all the great wines of the Heathcote region. We've got this year a record number of wineries exhibiting, 51 wineries this year, so including some new ones.
That's a hell of a lot of wineries.
Yeah, it is, yeah. We've got them showcasing the wines. Obviously, there's a lot of Shiraz available because that's the signature variety for Heathcote. And then there's a number of other new and interesting varieties that are showing promise in the region. We've got Sangiovese, Tempranillo, Nebbiolo, Mazan, Viognier, and a bit of Riesling. So all showing promise.
Petit Verdot and Grenache and Cab Sauv, all reds as well.
Yeah, that's right, and those as well, yep. Yeah, so there's a good selection in amongst the Shiraz. And then we've got about 30 food and produce exhibitors with some delicious stuff to help the wine go down.
Any of those we might know, Henry?
Wine producers?
Wine or food?
Food. We've got several olive producers with a range of different sort of olive-based products.
Mm-hmm.
Axtale Olives, who are local over towards Bendigo.
Yep.
We've got Chapman Hill Olive Oil. They're local down south of the region. What else have we got? We've got a couple of really good Olive Branch Preserves, another local olive producer.
Yep.
They do a lot of derivative products from olives. We've got Bondaroo Walnuts, who are always really popular with that fantastic walnut collection.
Yep.
And then we've got a number of different food providers on the day. There's a range of stuff. We've got Spanish paella type products. We've got some gourmet sausages. We've got wood fired pizza. We've got calamari. The Flying Calamari Brothers. They do a fantastic little cone of calamari, which is really popular.
Delish.
Yeah.
And there's a series of free tasting seminars over the weekend.
Yes, Pete. Yeah, the tasting seminars are always a popular thing, and we try to offer people the opportunity to expand their knowledge. This year we've got Rob Hicks, who's a well-known wine educator and broadcaster, who's conducting the seminars for us. And they run on the hour, on the quarter to hour, so mm-hmm. quarter to 12, quarter to 1, quarter to 2, etc. 5 sessions on each of the 2 days. So plenty of opportunity for people to get into a tasting seminar.
Now, those seminars are free.
They are free.
But
yes,
have
indeed.
To be booked, otherwise
book,
you won't
book
get
online.
In.
Yep. If you go to our website, you can book tickets. We've got early bird ticket prices on the website, so that's pretty handy for people to know, I think.
And you've got some music there as well. I noticed that Derek Gill, who is one of my good mates, having spent a number of years working with him at the ABC.
Right.
He'll be there with the Ugly Uncles band.
Yes, Derek's going to be there with the Ugly Uncles. We've got the Davidson Brothers. I just don't have the other...
There's some interactive entertainment for the kids, I believe, from Fusion.
Fusion, this wonderful crew from Bendigo come down each year and do a lot of interactive stuff for kids, which is really popular.
So this is a great way for those that aren't overly familiar with the Heathcote region to get out there, because it's only, what, an hour and a half?
Not even that, really. An hour and a quarter, probably, yes.
Melbourne. So
from
you
Melbourne.
Can get out there, you can spend the weekend, you can support the local economy. Henry, could you... Answer me a question. Has the flooding and all of the rain over the past 10 days had any effect on the Heathcote region as far as production goes?
Well, I think the general answer to that question, Pete, would be it will set us up for a pretty good vintage.
Right.
A lot of the Heathcote producers are dry land vineyards, no irrigation. So with the long drought we've had, many of them have just not had water, and so the only way they can get a viable crop is to cut back the yield. So I think this year we'll probably see some increased output from our vignerons.
Which will make for a better vintage. So the floods, if anything, for your region have been exceptionally good.
Oh, positive, yeah.
We will be speaking a little later to Otto Del Zotto. He is from the King Valley, and he'll be telling us about the damage to their region with wine.
Yeah.
So at what stage is the viticulture at this point with most of the wineries, Henry?
In Heathcote, we're just about getting to bud burst. There may even be some signs of that happening in vineyards already, although we have had fairly consistent cool weather, so... We need a little bit of spring sunshine, but then the vines will be going into bud burst.
And this is when we start to see the production of tiny little baby fruit.
That's the next step after bud burst, yes. Yeah.
Terrific. Mm. All right, so the website for people to have a look at if they want to get along and obviously make bookings for those free tasting seminars, Henry?
Yeah, that's heathcotewinegrowers.com.au.
Fantastic. That's okay. Henry, thank you so much. That's Henry Screen, who is the Executive Officer of the Heathcote Wine Growers Association. Do get out and support Regional Victoria, support the Heathcote Wine and Food Festival, and you may even see Henry while you're out there. Henry, thank you again.
Thanks very much, Pete.
Terrific. That's been a great chat, and I would highly recommend that you get out because there's some terrific wineries in and around the region. The past week or so has seen a tremendous amount of rain falling throughout southeastern Australia with some exceptional results. Of most immediate concern from the massive downpour, and there was up to nearly 100 millimetres in 24 hours in parts of Victoria, is the flooding currently being experienced in northern, northwest and central Victoria. Of note, hundreds of homes have been evacuated, particularly in the areas around Wangaratta, Bright, Horsham and Shepparton. And the rain has affected more than just homes, judging by some of the pictures that I've been privy to this week. One of the areas hit hardest by an onslaught of water has been the King Valley in Victoria's northeast, with several winemakers literally watching their vines go underwater. One such vineyard is that of Del Zotto at Whitfield, who apparently lost over $120,000 worth of pumping equipment in the floods. Joining me is the founder of the Del Zotto Wines family in the King Valley. It's Otto Del Zotto. Good afternoon, Otto, and welcome to Cravings.
Good afternoon, Brent. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's a hell of a loss, $120,000 worth of pumping equipment for a small business. How much other damage has been inflicted upon your vines there?
There's been a fair bit of damage on the vines and so on, and the river, the banks. But more than anything else, the vines, by working pretty sort of hard over the last few days with about half a dozen people and some machinery, we tried to clear away a lot of the debris and everything that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next stage, I've got to wait until it dries up a bit more and go in to stand up a lot of the vine and retry them again because a lot of them have been break down. Some of them got break down all the way down to the ground.
So when those vines have suffered that sort of damage, Otto, do they recover?
Usually they do, you know, even if they're breaking, you know, some of that, a lot of them they will reshoot. You probably won't get much this year, but next year they'll be starting again, you know, and we're lucky in that department. They're just, they're pretty sort of a hardy sort of a plant.
Mm.
You know, and you still, and you're still going to get some, you know, very good fruit out of it. You know.
So, were you in budburst already? Were you in that very early stage of growth?
Yeah, they're just starting the budburst at the moment, and we unfortunately we're having, you know, we would like to get still some, you know, really cold weather so they can just set back a bit more to be able to, you know, to wait until we get into the vineyard. With the machinery, because at the moment there's still a fair bit of mud, you know, there's a lot of silk and stuff like that. Through it, it's very hard walking in, and actually we still got one of the paddock, the one between the Stony Creek and the King River, that is still underwater, the one there. The river is flowing through the one there, you know, over rights of about over 60% of the river still in the one there.
So what's the effect on your bottom line? So if you can't, like, this is going to affect, obviously, your 2011 and potentially 2012 vintages.
With a bit of luck, it won't affect much at all on that, because we were lucky that the site we've been choosing over the last few years, we're redoing, regrafting different sites. So we still isn't putting all in one block. We're putting, for instance, even like the Prosecco, we got the Prosecco now in three different blocks.
Yep.
So if we're having problem on one, at least we got two others that we can ply with it. And that's the best part about it. We've been doing that now for the last 15 years to choose whichever site is better one for different, you know, for a different variety. And it's working pretty well. You know, so all right, we just sort of cop a bit of a bedroom, but when you're on the land, I tell you what, you just sort of get down, you're down for a few days and a week, and then you say, okay, have another glass of Barbera and a Prosecco and just start again.
Have another glass of wine and dust yourself off and get on with it. So
yeah.
I guess the flip side to the floods is that it means that there's a lot of fresh rainwater about, and there's dams up in the region that haven't been full for over a decade. Does it mean healthier crops in the long term to have had a fairly strong winter rain?
It is a healthier crop, but the thing is up here that we already on an average, you know, this year, we already up to about, what is it, 43 inches already for the year.
Yep.
And we're pretty lucky that even on bad years, we never run out of water up here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the best part about it. The only thing that I got a bit of a concern is just because even my pressure pumps, even for the house and the winery, I haven't even seen them yet where they are.
Right, so they've just floated away.
Yeah, so that's the other part about it. But until we don't get down to fix up the river to open it up, there's about at least half a dozen big gum trees in the middle of the river. And until we don't get big, heavy equipment in there to fix to shift it, we won't be able to put the river back to its course again.
Okay. Now, some are suggesting that large amounts of good rain at this time of the year are good to reduce soil salinity, increase the moisture content down through the soil horizons, and encourage the growth of some winter crops. Is that the same with you?
It does, yeah. The vines even, you know, because even, you know, vine is a biennial, and even for the fruit, you know, and what it does is storing a lot more energy and nutriment into the root zone, and then one day they will release it after. Probably it's going to give us a lot more work during the year, especially in the spring and early summer, because it's going to tend, by having a lot of energy, we're going to tend to push a lot more growth on it, and that growth, they're not necessarily all that growth is going to be on fruit. So what we got to do, we got to go in by hand and taking
and
a lot of the shoots off, you know. But that's what we're doing that usually every year, so we can achieve the best possible fruit out of the vines there.
Yep. Now, once you've done the tidy up and you've found your pumping equipment wherever it's floated away to, spring sunshine will hit and the vines will start growing really well. Ultimately, this is going to create, in some respects, another top vintage for next year, isn't it?
I will. Without doubt, you know, it's going to be another top vintage, you know. And For us, like I said before, you know, we're not the people that sort of, it doesn't matter what we're losing, you know, and that's why people on the land, I think they're a hard breed, or sometimes they're probably hard head, I don't know what you call it, but, you know, you just roll your sleeves up and you start again, you look to forward to the future, and all the time, whatever you're doing, whatever you're working, even sometimes we were working there in the mud there, and we say, oh yeah, this vine is still going to come out, some good fruit this year, we're going to put it in the bottle, and we're just looking forward to really to taste it in another glass of wine there.
Terrific. Well, if people want to come and see you, what's the website there, Otto?
The website should be www.dalzotto.com.au.
Excellent. So people can jump on the website and order your wine and help you in your recovery. And if they want to come to visit, where will they find you?
They'll find us up in the Keene Valley of Whitfield.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we got the restaurant Trattoria and the Cellar Door there.
Terrific.
And we got a festival coming up on the 20th and 21st of November, which is that the Festival of Prosecco.
Which is the Italian sparkling wine.
Yeah, the Italian sparkling wine, and also there is other varieties there, but we still, all the rides are open now, so there is no problem. People that can still come up, we need people to come up and visit us, so we can just sort of try to offset a bit of, you know, this hard work we're doing, but we're looking forward to see people up here all the time, you know. It's nice to see different people and have a good chat with them.
Fantastic. Otto, well, look, thank you so much for your time today, and we wish you every success with the vineyard in the tidy up, and I hope you find that pumping equipment wherever it's flown to.
Thank you very much.
Good on you. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Cheers.
Bye.
That's Otto Delzotto from Delzotto Wines. He's, in fact, the founder of Delzotto Wines, talking about the effects of these floods that they've had on those vineyards and the production. It seems it will be a good vintage after all for next year, so some good wines coming from the King Valley. We've heard all about a wine festival. We've heard about the damage done to some vines in Victoria. It's now time to speak to somebody who's at the other end of the spectrum. He's the man who's selling the wine. His name is Ewan Marsh. He's the owner of the Orchard in Beattie Avenue in Armidale. And he joins me on the line. Ewan, good afternoon.
Hi there, Pete. How are you going?
Good. Welcome to Cravings. Now you're out of the noise.
Yes, I'm out of the noise. Yes, I've got a very capable staff looking after the venue at the moment.
It's good to hear that there's capable staff there, mate. First of all, how long has the orchard been open?
We've been open for just under 5 months now, so we're still a very new operation.
Yeah, and this is one of these sort of areas along train tracks that sort of pop up and create these unique little villages.
Yeah, that's right. Beattie Avenue is sort of one of those little local haven, I guess. It's a little strip of shops, and they're all the buildings are, you know, well over 100 years old, and it's just it's a lovely little ambience up here. It's quite a hidden strip, but it's becoming quite renowned. So
now, across the road from Toorak Station.
That's correct, yes.
So someone's done their research on Google Maps.
very well done. Yep.
So let's talk about it. It's great food, it's great wine, it's great ambience, and the influences are Mediterranean, I guess, with shared plates, which seems to be the idea du jour, the idea of the year this year.
Yeah, look, I think, I guess our style is probably more European, I guess, but I guess the shared plates is something that I just think encourages a really nice sort of social atmosphere. Yeah, it's, you know, whenever you travel through Italy, and many of the countries around there, you know, there's a real big element of sharing and big family dinner tables and things for the middle of the table, and it just creates a really nice a nice family atmosphere, and that's something that I wanted to bring here. And I noticed a lot of restaurants around Melbourne and Australia are doing the same.
Well, looking at some of the restaurants that have been successful in this year's Age Good Food Guide, if we were to look at that as a point of reference, we've seen places like Izakaya Den and Mamacitas who have been recognised, and that's all very much shared plates. It seems to be the way that we're eating, and we've moved away from the very traditional entree main dessert style of dining. Would you agree?
Yeah, look, I do agree. I think there's certainly a space for that traditional style of dining, but I think also people are now enjoying a little bit more of a casual atmosphere, something which is a little bit more laissez-faire. You know, they can, you know, that they might order a few things and still decide if they want something more. They might be having a particular glass of wine, they'll try something with that, and then they'll move on to something different, and they'll try to match something else. So It crosses a lot of different cuisines too, like you were saying before with izakaya. You know, they're doing it with the Japanese, and that's almost, I guess, a tapas-style Japanese. And then you're looking at Mamacita, which is that sort of that Mexican influence, and they're doing the same. So it's just an interesting way to go about it, I think.
And then there's also the very successful Movida chain. There's places like Coda in Flinders Lane, all of whom have jumped onto this very sensible shared plates idea. It's a great way to eat, and it's far more convivial than sort of having to in some senses, share, you know, your half of a lump of fish or a lump of beef.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. It's an opportunity to taste a variety of flavours too, you know. And I think, it's a nice thing for, I think Australia, being such a young continent, a young country, I guess it's, it is very used to that very individual meal concept. But with this sort of new emergence of this dining, it's encouraging sharing. It's encouraging, trying new things, and it's just a really lovely atmosphere you can bring to a restaurant. So.
And our cuisine, as in the Australian cuisine, which is a wonderful combination, is in fact sort of constantly evolving. We've seen even in the last 10 years the evolution of our take on the sort of modern scientific molecular gastronomy style of food, and now we're evolving into something that's more European or that's more South American, if you will. How much more can our cuisine evolve?
How much more can it evolve? Look, I think it's actually, moving backwards. I mean, not backwards in a negative sense. It's actually moving back to traditions. I think molecular gastronomy, it certainly has its place, and it's certainly a theatre of dining, and it's one of those really special things you can do. But I think, in another sense too, that there's a real strong. I think there's a real strong influence in going back to basics, really looking at where a dish originated from and being true to what it originally was. And I think, when it comes to everyday dining, I think people aren't always after, a foam or a sphere of this or that. They're more after something that reminds them of somewhere or reminds them of a taste they had a long time ago when they were in this obscure country or city or that sort of thing.
I guess we're far more considerate of the provenance of food as well, and where it's come from and how it's been treated in its development and how it's been grown and its organic potential. So letting food speak for itself rather than trying to trick it up is probably what you're talking about, the regression in the way that we eat.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and particularly, at the moment, it's everybody's got busy lives, they're, migrating towards cities, and it's a hectic lifestyle, but there's just that real value to organic produce, to the farmer that's grown this or raised this livestock, or, there is really something to be said about, people's, people are really trying to promote that style of, people are accepting now that, food just doesn't come from a factory, it comes from somebody who's worked hard or somewhere else. Yeah.
And look, we are in the middle of the spring greys. Put Victoria on your table, which is encouraging Victorians or encouraging us to drink Victorian wine and eat Victorian produce that's grown and cared for locally. But let's talk about your background for a bit. You come from the Mornington Peninsula where you grew up, I understand.
Yep, that's correct. Yep.
And you've always been a bit of a keen wine and beer boy.
Yeah, look, I grew up down on the peninsula. Raised down there, and we're quite spoiled for choice down the peninsula. We've got some lovely areas that, a lot of the vineyards, and of course, a lot of the farms are doing a lot of produce. So we always had a lot of fresh food in that regard. And then I guess it's I always I've got a big passion for beer and wine, which. Obviously stemmed from a bit of experience that I had down there in the vineyards and things like that. But it's a marvellous part of the world.
Well, let's talk briefly about beer just for a second, because you might be able to help me here. I've recently stumbled upon a bit of an article that talks about some of the best beer experiences one can have in Melbourne. Are you familiar with the Two Brothers Brewery?
I have been to the Two Brothers Brewery, yes.
So this is in Moorabbin's industrial zone. We've actually had one of the boys from Two Brothers on the show before, one of the Ong brothers. So they're selling sort of boutique beers, and you can get down to Moorabbin to their place and look at that. And the James Squire Brewhouse at Victoria Harbour.
In Docklands. That's another place that I'm just reading these from a list, and I'm just making sure you agree with me.
Yep.
One of the areas is Mrs. Palmer's. Now, it's it's quality beer, and it's accompanying the specialty Parmigianas at Mrs. Palmer's.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether you're familiar with this. This is in, is it in Beechworth?
Mrs. Palmer's.
No, sorry. Little Burke Street.
I'm not 100% sure about Mrs. Palmer's. Yeah.
It's in Little Burke Street, sorry, and they do feature some Beechworth beer.
Beechworth Brewery, yep.
Beer Deluxe, which is here in the centre of Melbourne at Federation Square.
Yep, tremendous place, yep.
And the Little Creatures Dining Hall.
Absolutely.
Which is supposed to be the five top beer or areas to enjoy beer in Melbourne. What is it about beer? We're seeing the proliferation of microbreweries and people making some interesting beers. I think one that wasn't ultimately named for our Prime Minister, but I think she could adopt Ranga Beer, which is from the Southern Brewing Company, I think.
I think beer in Australia, particularly Melbourne, like you just mentioned, there were so many places there that are popping up here and there. There's a lot more to be said for beer than what we commonly regard to, I think. You know, a lot of people are treating beer a lot more like wine these days. There's a lot more thought process going into flavour profiles and ingredients, and like we were talking about before, about the origins of food and the organics and things like that.
Mm.
When it comes to the growing of the hops or the malt and things like that, people are going to extreme lengths to actually get the finest quality. And you'll find that, you know, people are getting obscure with their beers. You know, they're adding aromatics, they're adding things like, you know, we've got a couple of beers on the list here that include things like wormwood, which is one of the ingredients in absinthe, which used to make people hallucinate in certain quantities. And,
do you hallucinate drinking that wormwood beer?
Beg your pardon?
Do we hallucinate drinking that wormwood beer?
Oh, if you drink enough of it, I don't know. From the wormwood or the alcohol, I think for the alcohol that's making you hallucinate a little bit. But I mean, I've had a good crack at it too. But another thing, you know, like, I just think, you know, there's some beers here, and I've drunk many beers around, a couple of my favourite little beer haunts around Melbourne. That are, you know, some of them are vintage, like wine. Vintage to them. They've been cellared. They've been riddled in a cave in France, and they've been, imported from Germany, riddled in a cave in France, and imported into Australia. And you drink it out of a champagne glass. There's some really fantastic things going on. It's interesting, you know. There's the beers that don't taste like what we know today as beer.
Well, they don't taste like VB or Carlton's Draft, which are, in my mind, pretty disgusting. Because you do have an interesting and a challenging little beer list in there at the orchard as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Look, it's one of my passions, and it's something that I'm really eager to promote. I'm really eager to get people to experience something new and something that is completely different to what they're used to. So.
Mm. A couple of quick questions. You've got, is somebody dropping pans or something in the background?
Oh, I think that might be some builder next door. I can move away from them.
You ran the restaurant at 10 Minutes by Tractor, which is hosting last night and tonight. I must remind people, unfortunately it's sold out, but Tasting Notes, an event that sees the talents of winemaker Kim Chalmers, wine writer Max Allen, winemaker, the natural winemaker, whose name escapes me, and a percussionist. They've sort of formed this little band and producing this great little event down at 10 Minutes by Tractor. That venue has grown considerably in the last couple of years. How much of an influence were you at the restaurant in its growth?
Oh, look, 10 Minutes by Tractor, basically, that they encouraged me to grow. It was just probably more that they allowed me to grow rather than me allowing them to grow. You know, I certainly was very passionate about what they were doing there. They were uncompromising in the quality of what they were going to provide and in the wine that they were making. And I think they really nurtured my passion, and they allowed me to grow in it. And it's benefited me to want to aspire to open my own place. But they're just one of those establishments that are really honest about what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're really focused, and they're actually doing some very nice things.
Terrific. And one final question. You've got a fairly strong interest in game and that sort of seasonal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That you're doing some game and special promotions there at the restaurant?
Yeah, that's right. So we we're working with a winery at the moment to do some. Their wines are basically designed, they're not designed for, but they're very well matched with different game meats, and that's something that we're working on at the moment with the chef to create a menu to match with their wines, and you know, focus a lot on. On different game varietals, like, you know, we've got some venison and goats and things like
chocolate
that.
Chocolate and coffee is my hint with venison, and probably a big ballsy stout.
I can arrange a big ballsy stout, and I'm happy to go with that coffee and chocolate suggestion you gave me. So yeah,
it works
great.
Beautifully with venison in my mind. Ewan, have you got a website that people can look at?
I do. It's www.theorchard.com.au. It's just under development, so it should be available for everyone to view within the next coming weeks.
But they can at least find the address and the details of the restaurant. Mate, thank you for joining me, and continued success with The Orchard there in Armidale.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good on you. That's Ewan Marsh. He is the owner-operator of The Orchard in Armidale. I'd actually suggest you might want to get down and have a look. Serge Dansereau with his new book, French Cooking, and Melbourne's own Karen Martini with her new book as well. If you've got suggestions for the program, you can find Cravings at Joy94.9 on Facebook. You can Twitter @cravings_joy949, or you can indeed contact the station. Thanks to today's guests, Otto, Ewan and Henry, and all, as always, to the program support team.
To find out more about Joy94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.